Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
New week, new show, same idiots. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to The Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Brawlhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
Yo.
And we are unfortunately not joined by the co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi, right now, because apparently the Yankees are big business in that household.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that.
As apparently the invasion of the baseball playoffs has gotten to Liz, and she is unable to be able to speak with us yet. Hopefully she'll join us a little bit later. Tony, we got a lot to get to and not a whole lot of time to do it. So what do you say we dive right in?
All right. This ought to be fun.
I'm taking from that exasperated groan that you saw Hell in a Cell.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, here we go. All right, let's start with the final reaction for Hell in a Cell. Favorite match or moment?
Oh, Sasha and Becky, of course.
With an honorable mention to the tag team match that got turned into the tornado tag, because I thought that all four men in that match played their role spectacularly. And there's something about getting to see Luke Harper on a pay-per-view in 2019 that just makes my heart smile. Do I need to ask? Do I have to?
Well, I mean, let's not get too deep into it because it'll be an entire show. I first want to say that I'm not nearly as upset as other people. I just think that this is a bad time in the wrestling world to have a bad show if you're the WWE.
It wasn't even a bad show in my opinion, though. It was a bad match.
I just feel like it was Raw on pay-per-view. That's really it. I didn't feel anything spectacular other than the opening match. Everything else we either saw before or didn't care to see at that particular moment. So even the tornado match, which was great, it was just, it seemed like something you'd see on SmackDown, you know, with the exception of a couple of things. No, it wasn't a bad pay-per-view. But it was just a very, very either average pay-per-view, which I think we've talked about them being pretty good pay-per-views over the past couple of months. And then you kind of put an exclamation point on the average with the end of the pay-per-view, which, like I said, didn't upset me nearly as much as anybody else. I watched the pay-per-view a little bit later, and I kind of stayed offline just so that nothing was spoiled. And while watching the main event with no precursor, no opinions or anything from anybody else on Twitter or anything, it was like eye-roll inducing, but not to the point where it was annoying. It was just like, well, this is dumb. This is like, you know, there's an argument to be had about making your monster invincible. They've done it many times with Braun. I mean, shit, with Yokozuna, with The Undertaker. It's not something that's unheard of. But when you do it like this, as an introduction to a character, and no, I'm not counting the Finn match, because if you were to count the Finn match, it'd be a very different story, because that's not the same Fiend that we saw last night. What you did was you kind of retconned the wrestler, created this monster that is undefeated, you know, just basically you can't beat. He took more hits than Brock Lesnar did. That doesn't make sense. That doesn't flow with the logic that they've created on their own. And then you get ridiculous. And then you go against the rules that you've created yourself. And then you make it so that your face comes off as a just kind of a maniacal, you know, whatever. It all just spells to just a really, really bad reaction. And that's what you got. I think what bugged me more so than the reaction was the follow-up or lack thereof.
Well, yeah, there was absolutely no real follow-up for Seth or Bray, or Fiend, Bray, whatever you want to call him, on tonight's episode of Raw. I mean, we'll obviously get more into Raw as the show progresses here. And I can confirm, Tony, that Liz is out for tonight, so it is just the two of us.
What was that? I'm sorry.
Liz is out, so it's just the two of us tonight.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, it'll make the show go by a little bit faster. And I got a movie to watch.
Are you on your way to go see Joker?
Yes, fucking finally. I've had a busy-ass weekend, and I haven't been able to see it.
I've heard wonderful things, but I've not seen.
Yeah, you know, how hard it is for me to stay away from my Batman fandom, and I've had to do the work.
All right, let's get back to the Hell in the Cell, though, that we were just discussing a few seconds ago. It's I found myself in a similar situation because I watched on a little bit of a delay, so I kind of knew what happened, albeit accidentally one of my friends sent me the message while I crashed during the show, like just crashed completely, fell asleep. It had nothing to do with the show itself. It just had to do with the fact that I haven't been feeling the greatest the last couple of days. I woke back up, and then I actually picked up the show from where I fell asleep at, and I watched all the way to the end. And in the process, I was checking my messages and checking Facebook and checking Twitter and stuff, and I saw the backlash, no pun intended, towards former pay-per-views, of this particular match in general here. And while I get the idea of trying to make Wyatt's character look unbeatable, I think in the process you've sacrificed everything that you've done for other people up to that point. You mentioned the Brock Lesnar thing here. It took 5 curb stomps to put Brock Lesnar down. I think it was 5 curb stomps in a pedigree. It was 6 curb stomps in a pedigree and Bray Wyatt kicked out at 1. You just made Brock Lesnar look like a bitch. And Brock Lesnar has been your most effectively built monster over the course of the last 4 years. Whether or not I agree with Lesnar being that monster is irrelevant. You still completely decredibilized him in one particular segment. I'm not going to sit here and rant and rave about the integrity of the Hell in a Cell being compromised, because let's face it, the integrity of the Hell in a Cell was compromised years ago when they started having matches every single time end up outside of the cell anyway.
I mean, I'm pretty sure something stupid happened last year too. I just don't remember the specifics of it.
No contest. Braun Strowman and I think Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman inside of the cell, and Brock Lesnar causes a no contest.
Yeah, it is basically it's the epitome of bad writing, and this kind of proves everybody right, no matter who it is, whether it's Bischoff or Heyman. When Vince comes to play, you know, he's the ultimate decision maker, and then what's weird is, like, when you do something in life, you usually know what the reaction is going to be, unless you're a completely oblivious person. When you're a creator, when you write something, you kind of anticipate your audience. You think to yourself, oh, they're going to love this. Like, why else would you be a creative person? Me personally, as a writer, when I write something and I think it's good, my own ego is brushed, but I think of my audience. I think of who I'm speaking to with my writing. Even with this podcast or the Raw Report, we would like to think that people enjoy what we do, and that's why at times we kind of put a lot of energy into it. We put a lot of character into it. Unless you're some warped creative person that doesn't give a shit what anybody thinks about what you're creating because there's some niche market, you typically look at what you create and can't wait to put it out in the world. And it's just when you look at what happened last night, I want to know what, like, did they run out of time and just say, fuck it? Or is it like, you know what, the fans are going to love this. Like, are they that naive and you know, just blind? That's what blows my mind the most, is when you take out all the emotion that we feel about what happened and you look at the situation in a logical way, you got to really question the mentality of the people in that room, because how did they think this was going to go any other way? Like, really?
As I said, outside of that, I actually thought it was a pretty decent show. There were a few other things here and there that I could have done without, but outside of the finish to the main event, I actually thought it was a pretty decent show. The finish to the main event, though, has you walking away with a very bitter taste in your mouth. And I feel like we've said that a couple of times about pay-per-views this year already, Tony.
Yeah.
What's your overall show rating for Hell in a Cell?
I think I gave it like a 6, but that was all for the opening match. Like I said, it wasn't a bad show. It's just when you look at a pay-per-view and you understand that at any given Raw or SmackDown, you could have essentially saw this match or, like I said, had already seen the match, it just doesn't really have that same impact. I know that some people were claiming that the lack of build and the lack of actual card matches on the card kind of hurt that. And I didn't believe that until the pay-per-view came on, and you had no idea what to be anticipated for. Like, you had no idea what to be excited for, because you're just kind of watching it for one particular reason. And after that first match, what are you watching for outside of the main event? So it kind of removes you from the pay-per-view. And I didn't realize the impact of that until, you know, yesterday.
We had 3 matches going into Friday night, Tony, and then added a 4th on Friday. They added, of the 10 matches that happened, they added 6 of them on Sunday. One of them was added to the pay-per-view on the kickoff show.
Yeah.
I'm going to go a little
and
bit higher than Tony
added,
did.
They weren't excited. The matches that were added weren't something where you're like, oh, shit. You're like, well, okay, I guess that makes sense.
I went a little bit higher than Tony did. I'm at a 7 for the show, but that's because I also really enjoyed the tag team match that followed the Hell in a Cell match to open the show. And I also enjoyed the finish to the Mustafa Ali and Randy Orton match. Oh, wait, he lost his Mustafa to the Ali and Randy Orton match. I love that counter to the RKO by doing that handstand on his wrists. I really think that they could have done something with Ali if they would actually let that crucifix finish off of that counter be the finish for that match and given Ali the victory there.
Yeah, well.
Unfortunately,
it doesn't matter what you think.
We'll talk more about him in a few seconds. Who's your MVP for last night, Tony?
Sasha.
I'm going to go with Becky just so that way we're different. But, yeah, basically that Women's Hell in a Cell match was excellent. You know what it reminded me of, kind of? It reminded me of the New Day and the Usos Hell in a Cell match from a couple of years back where they had all those innovative spots with the weapons inside of the cell. And I thought that Becky and Sasha brought their own kind of take to that kind of game.
Yeah, they definitely did. It was fun. It was a good match, but it was also fun.
Okay, so we've mentioned the fact that the show is going to go under a rebranding here, as we are now called just The Reaction instead of Raw Reaction here. Well, one of the reasons that we're undergoing said rebranding is that we're actually going to start discussing SmackDown now that it kind of falls into that weekend purview of SmackDown pay-per-views Monday Night Raw. So SmackDown debuted on Fox on Friday here, and the first thing I want to ask you, Tony, real quick, is 3.8-something million viewers for the first episode of SmackDown Live on Fox. Do you think that's a good number? Do you think that's a bad number? Do you think that's kind of going to be status quo going forward?
Honestly, I don't know. I've never been a big numbers guy. I don't really particularly care who watches the show outside of me and our, you know, podcast. So if the numbers are low, I stand pretty solid on the fact that I've never once talked about ratings. It's not something that I go by, nor do I care, especially considering the world that we live in right now. It's very, very hard to tell who's really watching what and when. I watch SmackDown on Hulu. I watch Raw on a stream from fucking Europe. So it's hard to tell who, you know, and I don't care also. So with that being said, I don't know if that's a good number. I don't know if that's what they're looking for. The assumption is that that's exactly what they want. And Raw was great up until the very, I'm sorry, SmackDown was great up until the very end. So I think that, I think they're going to get some eyes. I think they're going to hold on to that. Fox is probably going to push a lot. I mean, I've seen advertising for SmackDown joining Fox everywhere. And I mean everywhere. So that helped. And I believe that's mostly Fox doing that. So, yeah, we'll see how well they do. But for the most part, I wasn't surprised at the success of the debut show.
Two main talking points for Friday Night SmackDown. You ready?
Sure.
The first one is the inner kid in Baron Corbin coming out as he's marking the fuck out at being in the ring with The Rock to start the show. Rock finally returns to WWE programming for the first time in 3 years for the 20th anniversary edition of SmackDown, as they were calling it. And basically it was. It's actually a little bit afterwards, but close enough. September of 1999, officially on UPN, but regardless. Rock comes back after Becky Lynch is to start the show. She is interrupted by Corbin, and then The Rock comes out, and the three of them have a back and forth there, with eventually leading to Rock and Becky teaming up to take out Corbin. Two parts to this question, Tony. One, do you think we ever see The Rock in a wrestling ring again as an actual performer? Two, are you okay with him coming back as a part-timer such as this and being used in these spots, even if we don't see him in the ring again?
I don't think we'll be seeing him wrestling again. I would love it, and I think he's in great shape, at least visually. So I wouldn't mind it. Just, I mean, not even nostalgic-wise, just he's The Rock, you know? He transcends everybody, in my opinion. As a part-time capacity, I don't really want him back. I don't think that he'll help anybody. I think that he'll hurt more than he'll help. Him putting Corbin down doesn't bother me in the least, especially because The Rock has a way of kind of giving you the rub even while insulting you. Admittedly, his insults have gotten a little worse as years have gone by, from Cookie Puss to STD. Some of them kind of seem a little forced, but it's The Rock. Truly the only downfall that I see when The Rock shows up is how you cannot help but compare him to everybody that's around him in these segments. And just how different he is, where Corbin sounds like he's, you know, scripted and reading that script. The Rock is just fucking talking. Even if we go back to the bullet points on his wrist, where, you know, those are bullet points, it's still very much The Rock. I don't know. It seems like he has a full character as opposed to Corbin, who's still, like, he just started becoming this King Corbin, and even that's not fully fleshed out.
Well, I thought Becky held her own in the ring with The Rock there. I thought her and Rock played off of each other very well.
Oh, yeah. No, Becky is one of those people that sounds somewhat natural in her promos. But even that, even the setup of the STD joke was very, like, you know, kind of forced. Whereas The Rock comes off almost 99% natural. I'd say Becky's more like an 80, because even her quips are great. When she's being, like, Twitter funny, she's amazing. But she still's got to hit her point. She's still got, you know, certain things that she has to say, I'm sure. And it's just, it's the comparison of The Rock to basically anybody. It's almost unfair.
Do you think this was kind of Becky's get back after the end of days from Corbin at whatever pay-per-view it was? I don't even remember. Extreme Rules.
I don't think they think that intelligently.
Because this is the first time the two of them have shared a ring since that match. So I just, that was one of the thoughts that I had. But then again, that's probably me just booking the company for them again. And I know how Tony feels about that. There's something else Tony loves that we'll talk about later tonight from Monday Night Raw as well. I'm sorry, Tony. You getting angry is what brings in viewers, though. Because when you get angry, you get informative. And when you get informative, people start listening.
Well, that's good.
The other main talking point that I had from SmackDown is the episode of tonight's edition of The Reaction, Tony. And I have to do my best kind of Vince here in order to make this work. That's gotta be Kane Velasquez, as he is accompanied by Rey Mysterio for a little revenge on Brock Lesnar. Okay, go ahead, rant and rave about the Brock and Kofi match, because based on the way that you stated it during the course of our Hell in a Cell review there, it seems like this was the only thing on the show that you didn't care for.
I'm just very, very upset that they find the need to continue to assure that we understand that Brock Lesnar is a beast. That's kind of a given. There's nothing wrong with someone who was your world champ, who has fought multiple people for the title and won, who has been in matches with amazing talent and won, such as Orton, who's defended the title to the point where, you know, some people might very well start believing the fact that he deserves the belt. Putting him as the face of your company, making him the biggest star on your blue brand, leading into the Fox purchase, only to have him lose in 10 seconds. I'm okay with him losing. He's facing Brock Lesnar, and I think I weigh more than Kofi Kingston. So, like, it makes sense, and I wouldn't be upset. It's all in the matter of how you lose. And we've seen the WWE do this time and time again where they sacrifice a person's, you know, growth. They stunt their growth. In some ways, they damage the push completely. And you could look to Braun Strowman for an example. Just to give us the impression that the Brock that we see on the screen is a beast. But we already knew that. So you have to ask yourself, when you look at a decision like this, what do you gain versus what do you lose? And the horrible, horrible reality is we gained nothing. Kane could have showed up without Brock even winning the title, and you would have had the same impact. Like, there's nothing there. There's nothing to gain. And what is that second question? What did you lose? You lost a lot. You hurt Kofi. And I'm sure, like I've told you many times before, you can build anything in a day. Really, if you're a good writer, you can make an episode of SmackDown be Rebuild Kofi Project, and it could work if you're good. But why would you put yourself in that corner? Why wouldn't you give it a competitive match where he ultimately lost and now Brock's the champ going into this Fox deal? I don't know why you can't do that. I don't know why.
I'm going to actually give you Lance Storm's opinion of this year because I 100% agree with Lance Storm. Fox wanted a real fight feel for SmackDown, correct?
Yeah.
Sometimes in real fights, people get caught. Kofi got overly hyped up. He rushed into it, and he ran into getting caught with an F5. He didn't get beaten by Lesnar. He didn't get squashed by Lesnar. And anybody who says he's got squashed by Lesnar does not know what that word means. Kofi was not squashed by Lesnar. Kofi got caught by Lesnar with that F5, and that's what spelled the end of Kofi's title reign. Would it have made sense to let Kofi kick out of one? Yeah, probably. It would have done him a little bit of good in the future. That being said, Kofi didn't take a sustained beating in this match like he did when they had their match at Beast in the East a couple of years ago over in Japan. Kofi simply got caught and got pinned by the better man on that night. I don't have an issue with the way this match went at all.
Well, I have a huge issue with it, and it comes with everything that I explained, especially considering where we're going with this and who Brock's first challenger is going to be, a person who's not a wrestler, who allegedly is not even signed quite yet. The story that they want to tell doesn't need the title. And this goes back with the arguments that I've had before many times where whenever the title takes a secondary seat to what's going on, instead of an enhancement, it comes off as a waste. You're wasting Kofi. You're wasting the belt. You're wasting Brock. If you want Brock and Kane, don't go. I have zero interest in it. But if you see value in that, go ahead and run it. I don't think the title is necessary, nor do I think Cain Velasquez would ever be interested in the WWE title, kayfabe-wise. He's there out for revenge because of what he did to Rey Mysterio. He's not there for the title.
And to Dominic.
Right.
I agree with that point. I don't think that the WWE Championship needed to be involved in this. Unfortunately, the Saudi Arabian princes did feel that, so, well, we're all fucked. That being said,
we've had that conversation.
Yeah, and I don't feel the need to have it again. I'm sure people can go back and listen to any number of episodes in our archives and figure out that conversation. Real quick, though, let's discuss the Cain Velasquez factor here. based on what I've seen from his performances in AAA, as Justin Roberts would say, you know, on AEW, Kane's actually kind of taken to professional wrestling. Does this mean I have any kind of an interest in seeing Brock Lesnar versus Cain Velasquez in a WWE ring? Abso-fucking-lutely not. However, I'm sure that there are people that will enjoy this match, and I'm sure that this is a match that could probably draw some other UFC fans in, and that might be the market that Fox might be looking to capitalize on, given the fact that they just lost UFC to ESPN at the start of the year.
Yeah, you know, I'm all for new eyes. I really am. I'm not going to shy away from fans that aren't there before. The problem is, are you going to keep these fans? Because although I love my wrestling product, I can't imagine a UFC fan flipping the channel, watching a show like Raw tonight and thinking, oh, this is good shit. I need to stick around and watch this for sure.
I don't disagree with that. I didn't think Raw was bad. I just didn't think it was good. It was just there.
God, it was just there.
We'll talk about Raw here in a little bit. Let's hit some quick hits for SmackDown. You ready?
Sure.
Four Horsewomen tag. They ran it at MSG because it was a big show there. They run it here on the debut of Fox. It was basically the same match. Charlotte once again taps Bayley to set up the women's title match at Hell in a Cell. Your thoughts?
I mean, I wasn't, you know, it was fine. SmackDown as a whole was fine. I thought it was a good start. I watched it and I enjoyed it. It kind of breezed by, which is usually what I want from a wrestling show. So I didn't mind any of this, really.
I enjoyed the women's tag match, and I do think it was a bold statement putting them out there first. Eight minutes in the ring once they came back from commercial, and they actually made the most of it too, because I thought they had a pretty good little match here. The thing about it that I noticed was is we kind of made fun of the whole lip service to the women's evolution, the revolution, and everything here on the show here. But them actually putting the women out there first on Fox, starting the show with Becky Lynch, I mean, before Raw comes out, and then actually sticking with the women's tag match is the first match in the Fox era for SmackDown there. It says that maybe there's a little bit more to that than we were possibly giving them credit for. Seth Rollins versus Shinsuke Nakamura is broken up by Firefly Funhouse Bray attacking with the mandible claw and throwing Seth off the stage. If only it would have been that simple on Sunday.
Yeah, well...
Career versus career ladder match, Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. I actually thought this was a really good match for a blow-off here. I mean, Shane obviously shouldn't be in the ring at this point in his life. He's almost 60. So him being in the ring on a consistent basis isn't good for anybody. But if he is going to go out this way, he at least gets an opportunity to go out on his terms in his kind of style of match here with Owens. And Owens gets to look strong to the debut audience as well as a guy that comes off as a major superstar and somebody that puts down the boss's son.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it, too. I thought it was a good match. I thought it was like a nice little, you know, harking back to the old school days where there was a main event after the hour one and a main event after hour two. They did great. It had an air of, weight to it. It was very, very important, I guess you could say. And the right guy won, obviously. So I'm cool with Owens and Shane just stopping. And it was a good way to get Shane off of TV. I don't think we need an authority figure. I'm a little worried that we're going to get, like, Fox exec whatever pretty soon. But ultimately, I like that match.
The only way I'm okay with that is if that Fox executive's name is Eric Bischoff. So I don't mind Eze on TV. Eight-man tag team match is the setup for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Braun Strowman, The Miz, and Heavy Machinery defeat AJ Styles, Randy Orton, Roode, and Ziggler when Braun pins Ziggler. The big talking point is the fact that Braun attempted to hit a motherfucker with another motherfucker when he threw Dolph Ziggler at Tyson Fury at ringside.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about this, obviously, once we get into Monday Night Raw, so let's move on. Lumberjack match. Eric Rowan takes on Roman Reigns here. if Roman and Brian were going to go over at Hell in a Cell and that was the plan here, I almost think that you should have beat Roman here.
Yeah, I was kind of curious as to why that happened, but I don't know. Lumberjack matches are one of those matches that I've never enjoyed. They kind of remove me from the situation. And the big reason why is something that I'll bring up later that correlates with the end of Raw. I just don't see why any of these wrestlers would care about the two people in the ring. So it kind of takes a lot out of me as far as a fan or as a viewer goes. But I don't know, Rowan's been impressing me.
That takes us to the aforementioned Kofi Brock Lesnar match, which we discussed earlier. Kane Velasquez comes down at the end, and that's the end of SmackDown. Favorite match or moment from Friday night, Tony?
Damn, I forgot we have to do that.
I mean, if you want to, we can kind of combine them both. We could do like a favorite match moment of the weekend.
Yeah,
like Raw and SmackDown
like
together.
That.
All right, we can do that then. We'll shift that. Keep in mind, folks, this is our first show with the double show format, so we're kind of a learning process as we go. So, yeah, that would actually make more sense, too, especially when there's going to be three of us discussing these things in the future as well,
mm-hmm.
rather than throwing two final reactions out, having the one single final reaction at the end of the show. All right, let's get to tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. For some reason, we're still in fucking California, Tony.
Yeah, and we're in the armpit of California, too.
Well, they were in Sacramento yesterday. I don't know how it gets much worse than that.
Bakersfield is horrible.
All right, let's hit the two big talking points for Monday Night Raw, the first of which, Tyson Fury. Apparently, it's going to be a thing with him and Braun Strowman going forward. They have an interview with Fury backstage. Apparently, dude has five kids, so good for him. Good luck with that shit. Jesus Christ. I feel like this is the part where Rick calls in, "You son of a bitch." Anyway. But they do an interview with Tyson Fury backstage saying that he's here to demand an apology from Braun Strowman. Strowman is interviewed backstage saying that depending on how Tyson Fury talks to him will depend on if he gets that apology or not. Inside of the ring, it's Tyson Austin for the new generation. I guess Tyson Strowman for the current generation. As it is a celebrity ruckus broken up by Tony's favorite segment in all of the WWE, the roster pull apart brawl. All right, let's first focus on the actual effects of Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman here. Does this do anything for you at all?
No. I don't know who this guy is. I don't care who he is. And no amount of promo packages or recaps or selling shows will make me care who he is. We're at a point where our two main programs on each show is Kane Velasquez and Brock, and now Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman. Do you see that something in each one of those does not quite equate to what we've been known to, you know, enjoy?
I'm not disagreeing with you. The crowd seemed invested, though. The crowd definitely seemed to be reacting the way that they wanted him to.
Well, I think the crowd really enjoys pull apart brawls as you know, almost as a like a given, like they're gonna like this, you know. Truly, unless
yes.
there's a tug of war over a belt, for the most part they like the anticipation of violence.
The tug of war Legos. Lego my egos, Tony, and then talk about the pull-apart itself there. I know that you hate the pull-apart. People that have listened to the show for a long time know that you hate the pull-apart. Those who might be new to the show might not know why you hate the pull-apart brawl. Why don't you go out and explain it?
Because it makes no sense. Now, look, let's look at the roster of wrestlers and assume that even though they may respect Tyson Fury as a fighter, they still see him as a guest, okay? Then let's assume that they respect him as a guest and they're willing to say what's up and say hi and talk about his career and whatnot. Then we look at Braun. Braun is a man who has squashed probably everybody that was in that ring, breaking them up. Then we have a ring surrounded by security for whatever reason. Whose security is that? Is that Tyson's security? Is it the WWE security? Is it there to protect Tyson because Tyson comes off as a guy who doesn't need protection, who also wants an apology and may very well strike first if he doesn't get it? Case in point, he pushes Braun before anything else. Of course, this is a retort to last week, but what I'm saying essentially is, where did security come from? Also, major shout out to Eric Watts. I saw you, big guy. Love you. He's like the only security that WWE hires that is, you know, that looks realistic. Anyways, back to what I was saying. So you got security surrounding the ring where, you know, Braun and Tyson make quick work of them, knocking them out and everything. And then you have people like Keith Slater, Mojo Rawley, No Way Jose, Maria's husband, like these people who, although I can't pinpoint the dates, who I'm pretty sure Braun has squashed at one point or another, you have him run down. Somebody in the back is saying, hey, guys, go out there and break it up. I've said this many times before. Kayfabe, as a wrestler sitting and catering on your second piece of steak, would you get up? Would you even give a shit what was going on? Would you care for a modicum of a second that Braun Strowman and some dude that we don't even know is about to fight? Why? Why would Cesaro care about this at all? So you run, you go down there, there's like 10 of you, and now seemingly you 10 cannot hold back a boxer who's not a wrestler, but then you get this bullshit, like very, very obvious, hold back, pause, hold back, pause, hold back, pause, jump, attack, pause. And then for whatever reason, at one point or another, it just kind of stops. Having been in fights and seen fights, that shit doesn't stop until someone gets knocked the fuck out or the cops show up. So there's just so many holes and there's so many things wrong every single time. It's very rare that a pull-apart brawl makes sense to me because it doesn't. It takes me out of the situation, makes me care even less. And when you see it so many times with people that just don't work, like, why would EC3 care about any of this? Why would he do this? Why would he put himself on the line, like, for anything? Why would he do that? He doesn't strike me as a character that would do that, that would care about Braun. It's never going to work for me. Never.
Is it just me, or does it look like Cedric got injured in the pull apart too?
Probably. I don't know, man.
No,
I think that was around the time I was rolling my eyes.
Probably, because you were probably sitting there in a state of constant eye roll during the course of that pull apart, because I know how much you love those, and I knew, yeah, that's definitely going to have to be something we touch on tonight once it happened. So my other talking point for tonight got changed, Tony.
Oh, okay.
My original talking point for tonight was going to be the fallout from the Hell in a Cell match, except for the fact that there was like a 2-minute video package and then not a fucking word else about it. No Seth Rollins, no Fiend, no Firefly Bray, nothing. Not a fucking thing. So instead, we're going to pivot. Do you like Friends? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. And then you would get that reference. Hopefully other people listening do. To the women's division here, and we're going to discuss the Women's Championship Showcase. First, we'll talk Miz TV real quick here, as Miz has Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch on as guests. They tease Charlotte and Becky going back and forth and facing off once again, because apparently those two were destined to feud forever. They are interrupted by Asuka and Kairi Sane, who have just won the women's tag team titles, despite having had one match on SmackDown over the course of the last month before getting that opportunity at LMSL. But apparently the Kabuki Warriors are kind of leading heelish now, as Asuka used the green mist to pin Nikki Cross at Hell in a Cell. And then in the match tonight on Monday Night Raw, she used green mist once again, kind of, to pin Becky Lynch. First, your thoughts on Miz TV. The belief is that Becky's probably going to end up on SmackDown. Based on us seeing Alistair on Raw tonight, that means Zelina probably comes to Raw. Zelina moves to Raw. That means Andrade and Charlotte probably come to Raw as well out of this roster split. So teasing Becky versus Charlotte while actually keeping them apart here. Do you think eventually we go back down the Charlotte versus Becky road?
Charlotte annoys me. Tonight was no different. She was not that good tonight, wrestling wise, and she's never that good promo wise. thankfully, her words were cut relatively short. So yay. Her and Becky going. I mean, they're two of the four horse women. They're gonna fight. They're destined to, you know, dance this fight forever. So I'm cool with it. It's just I think the character of Charlotte is this egomaniacal wrestler who feels she could do no wrong. I'm just really hoping that that's not bleeding into the person behind the character, because she did a lot wrong in the match.
Speaking of the match, Kabuki Warriors pick up the win, as I mentioned here. I will say this much. I was pleasantly surprised that Asuka and Kairi got the win, because when I saw that this match was announced, I'm like, okay, which one of the tag team champions are we beating tonight?
Yeah, it was nice to see the unity amongst the two, and it makes sense because they're a team, and Charlotte and Becky are very much not a team. I don't know, Charlotte was just clunky. She was off, you know. She was as good as her makeup was tonight, which is to say not good at all. I don't really know what was wrong. Maybe she was tired, or maybe there's just a little bit of miscommunication. I mean, at the very least, you know, she didn't have to worry about being Mickey Fox versus, what was it, Mickey James versus Alicia Fox. Was that who it was? Or was it Mickey and
Melina?
Do you remember that
and Alicia
really,
Fox?
Really bad? Oh, man, that was bad.
It's Cameron. That's Cameron's favorite match, man.
No, that's not who I'm talking about. It was Gail Kim and Mickey James, I think. I don't know. I remember seeing one of the worst.
I remember the Jackie Gata situation, but that was a mixed tag match.
No, that was pretty bad, too. Okay, so apparently there's a lot of them. But what I'm saying is Charlotte's obviously way better than that. But tonight there was a lot of just minor missteps that, you know, shouldn't have happened. And you know, the moonsault off the top, does that ever look good for her? I think she might just be too tall for it. I love seeing the fact that she could flip, but she's always landing on her feet, hardly ever touching the people she's attempting to, you know, hurt.
The corkscrew one in the triple threat at WrestleMania 2 years ago actually looks really good, but that's because she actually landed that onto Becky and Sasha rather than overshooting them like she traditionally does.
Yeah, all of it just kind of came off a little clunky. It wasn't a bad match. It was just a bit, you know. How do you feel about Asuka and Kairi, although they're heels, cutting promos in complete Japanese? Do you think that that's a good move? Do you think it's an archaic, you know, relic of the past where the foreigner must speak their own language to assure you that you know that they're heels? Or do you think it's kind of just par for the course?
Not to turn this show political, because we've always tried to avoid that one here. But I think in modern-day America, xenophobia is very much alive and well. And you're tapping into a lot of people's base instincts and their natural xenophobic instincts by having them cut these promos in Japanese. Do I like it? I'm kind of indifferent towards it, but I can understand why they're doing it, because it's cheap heat, but sometimes cheap heat is the best heat. Because it's a guaranteed reaction, you know what I mean?
All right.
And now for Raw's edition of...
Bang, 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 bang! Try and stop it! Bang, bang! Here I come! Bang!
Quick hits!
Bang!
I have not heard that in so long.
I figured I'd bring it back for tonight since I had it in the sound cue. The opening of Monday Night Raw.
Take the fish.
That one was for you, Rick. Rusev is supposed to battle Randy Orton, or so we're told. However, he is jumped by Randy Orton and Baron Corbin, which I actually thought was pretty cool. Like, hey, we haven't seen this to open a show in a while. An actual attack happening inside of the ring instead of a setup match or a promo segment. Okay, I can get behind that. And then Bobby Lashley had to show up and fuck everything up. I do not care about the Bobby Lashley Lana pairing. I don't. I can't. It's not in me to care. And the attempted trash TV with Lana slipping her bra off and then climbing underneath the blanket, those two have zero sexual chemistry. They have less chemistry than Becky and Seth did. And I didn't know that was possible. Tony?
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm not interested in this at all. Lashley is laughable. Lana is, you know, sometimes my accent is here, sometimes it's not. This is not something that even the worst couple, you know, would do to one another. It's not believable at all. It's just annoying. It's not how you start Raw. Okay, you probably shouldn't start the show with this ever again. It's just unfortunate that people were begrudgingly awaiting Seth Rollins to come out and celebrate his win. And when it didn't happen, I thought that was a good move. And then they go and do a bad move.
In fairness, though, Rusev does get to beat the shit out of people out of revenge. Pissed off Rusev was fun.
Yeah, but nobody cares. Like, you know, what did King say? Like, I mean, this is instantly relatable. I mean, I never had my girlfriend stolen by a big black man and been shown on video where, you know, I don't know how this is relatable, King. Also, that is so... not Rusev's house. Like, I don't know. I imagine a lion emblazoned blanket and like the head of a fucking beast on the wall. I don't know. It just none of it was believable.
I got nothing to add to that, so I'm just gonna go ahead and move on. Last woman standing, Natalya and Lacey Evans. I mean, the work was okay. It just seemed like it really dragged to me.
Well, it dragged because this fucking program has dragged. Lacey is not interesting, and a trash can with Natalya's name is not interesting. And Natalya, who, for whatever reason, comes out very, very angrily and then just starts smiling, is just weird. I'll admit that they got me a little bit at the end. It kind of got a little better, and it was a little bit more intense, and I was like, all right, they're trying
the finish was
some
nice.
Shit here. Yeah, it was nice to see Natalya get 100 points on Tony Hawk with her little kickflip fall. It was nice to see a powerbomb on a table that was just randomly there. How convenient for that. What really bothered me the most, because there's a lot of things that bothered me, but what bothered me the most was Natalya wins by standing up, which looked like the hardest thing she's ever done in her life. It looked like she was about 2 seconds away from fainting, and she was struggling to keep that stance because if she knew if she fell, they would start the count over. And it was very believable, and I was like, all right, cool. And then the minute her music hits and she's announced the winner, the sell job is completely over. She runs to the announce table, hops up on top, stands with her arms stretched out in the air, and celebrates like she just won the fucking Olympics. Where did that damn near fainting injury go? I don't know, it's very little, but it pissed me off. And it was not a good way to start the show after seeing what happened to Rusev. It was just like a 1-2 punch. I'll be honest with you, I didn't enjoy Raw not a single bit until the second hour. The first hour to me was completely just unentertaining.
See, I actually thought that the Dolph Ziggler-Robert Roode versus Viking Raiders match was pretty good.
I think the Viking Raiders are great. I have zero interest in Dolph Ziggler.
Well, I think this is going to play into next week here, Tony, because with the draft happening next week here and commentary talking about the fact that tag teams could be broken up here, I think that we're going to see the Viking Raiders get the Raw tag team titles in order to keep them together next week, and then we can split up Ziggler and Roode and never have to talk of them as a tag team again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they do have the red light from the Fiend, so that automatically equates to a push.
The only thing that I didn't quite understand for this match here is Ziggler and Roode finally get a tag team finish, and it's kicked out of. Because I thought that Spinebuster zigzag combo looked sick.
That was pretty cool.
I'm okay with the Viking. let me properly address the Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland. I'm okay with them picking up the win here, and I'm okay with them winning the tag team titles. I just question where you go forward with them. I mean, it almost has to be the returning Authors of Pain, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of seems that way. I'm okay with them winning, too. They're an actual team, and I'm not interested in Ziggler and Rude, together or apart. I just don't really – neither one of them tickle my fancy. AOP is just looking more and more badass by the day. I don't know – maybe it's because it's recorded, you know, pre-recorded, and they're able to do takes and, you know, different camera angles and shit, but they really come off as badasses in their native tongues.
See, that's going to be my thing here, is how do you think we're going to respond to them? And let's go ahead and skip forward to that since we're discussing them already. How do you think we're going to respond to them? How do you think the audience is going to respond to them once they're back in front of a live camera, in front of a live situation?
It's rough. I mean, I think they've talked enough here to where they don't have to talk anymore. I'm hoping when they show up, they have a different look. I don't need the vest. I don't need the shield-like, you know, vest at all. I want them to have their own distinct look, but I want it to be theirs. I think that they should not come back squashing people, of course.
Good
I don't know.
With
it's
going to
be kind of hard. I know. I also don't – I don't know who would be – their voice, if we were even to get a manager for them or whatever, you know, I don't know who would.
Zelina.
Like,
give her a stable with them and give her a stable with them and Andrade.
I mean, sure, why not?
Speaking of Zelina, Aleister Black is back in action on Monday Night Raw as well, as he faces both Singhs. And for those of you wondering what a squash match looks like, this was a squash match. Rumors are that Fox is not interested in Aleister Black because they feel the character is too demonic, too satanic. But they want Bray Wyatt, the Fiend. Okay, sure. Makes sense. Perfect. Your thoughts on Aleister Black?
I like Aleister Black. I don't like videos of him asking for a fight and then coming back and he's like basically naked and saying, never mind. Like, where did you film this? Because I thought you were at some other place, but now it seems like you're not. It seems like you're just in the backstage area with a purple curtain.
See, I'm okay with these segments, though, because, remember, they used to air for the longest time on SmackDown, and nobody would come pick a fight with him there. So now it's a sign that he's showing his frustrations over people avoiding him, and he feels him not getting his proper due in the company. I'm actually okay with the way that they handled him backstage, then coming down to the ring. Now, I wanted a better opponent for him than the Singhs, but if you're going to get him on television, if you're going to get him television time, then beating up two dropper weights isn't probably not the worst way to go about it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like it. I didn't like them, you know, shouting. I'm sure this is a gimmick that they've had in 205 Live.
It is.
But this just, yeah, it just annoyed the shit out of me.
Real quick, what did you think of the finish? What did you think of Aleister's Dragon Sleeper variation?
I mean, it looked menacing. I like a little regal callback, you know, so I'm cool with that. And I always love variety with finishers, unless you're Kevin Owens and you're doing the stunner.
In that case, that the stunner's cool with you too.
No, man, Owens needs some work on that.
It's not as fluid as Austin's is the problem. He needs to work on his kick wham, maybe. Okay, regardless, Rey Mysterio promo where he discusses that apparently Cain Velasquez is Dominic's godfather. Yeah, because this story needed that. Thanks, I guess. Whatever.
I mean, sure, I wasn't offended by it. I was more offended by Rey's continued necessity to cut a promo in both English and Spanish. But then I found out they were in Bakersfield, so it made sense to me. At least we have a reason for Kane being there other than, you know, he beat Brock before. So I'm not, like, bothered by it. It's very WWE reasoning, though.
Can I just point out you just gave me a Looney Tunes moment there?
Sure.
You said that he beat him before, and the very first place my mind goes is, he beat him before, and he can do it again, Bugs Bunny style.
Wow. Yeah. Didn't expect that.
It's been a long week. It's been a long weekend, Tony. The OC gets a little bit of revenge from the loss the night prior as they take down the Lucha House Party. AJ Styles' phenomenal form puts down Lince Dorado. Post-match, Grand Metalik gets taken out by the Good Brothers, and then Lince takes a Styles Clash off of the second rope as well as the OC gets a little bit of bounce back from the attack from the Viking Raiders and Braun Strowman the night before. Hey, at least the champion didn't lose this match.
I mean, it was the Lucha House Party. At first, I was wondering why they gave them so much time, and then I realized, once again, they were in Bakersfield, so that made sense. It was what it was. I'm not, you know, AJ Styles on TV is always great. I love how he sold for them. It's just so, so unlike anybody else to, you know, make the Lucha House Party look credible.
I wouldn't be opposed to an AJ Styles Kalisto singles match. I mean, I think Kalisto's the best of the three members of the LHP as a single, so. And obviously, given what we've seen with AJ's ability to work with smaller competitors in the X division in TNA, I feel like they could have some decent chemistry and put on a couple of decent matches.
Yeah, I'm sure they would, but, you know, that's unlikely.
Well, Kalisto's at this level in the WWE, and AJ Styles is at, like, a level six times higher than he is, so probably not. All right. Miz TV followed, and then the Kabuki Warriors, Becky Charlotte tag match. We already discussed that in detail. Apollo Crews and Ricochet have a slobbering party where they both fall over each other to compliment the other before they face off. I feel like that's as close to a televised circle jerk as we can get on WWE programming. They then go out and have a match that Ricochet picks up the victory in with the recoil in about 7 minutes. I appreciate them reminding us that Apollo Crews is still a thing. At no point did I think he had any chance to beat Ricochet in this match, but the match was okay itself.
Yeah, it was fine. It was there. It's not anything that, you know, impressed me. I don't know. The entirety of Raw was one of those episodes where I was just like, all right.
And then the main event segment was Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman with the pull apart. We already discussed that, thus bringing us to the end of this episode of Monday Night Raw and putting an official wrap to the first edition of The Reaction. We now move into our final reaction, now to cover both shows. Favorite match or moment from Raw or SmackDown?
Shit.
If you need a second, I can go first.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead and go first. I'm pretty sure I know what I'm going to say, but
I'm going to pick the Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens ladder match. I thought that both of the guys busted their ass in that match and told a really fun story. Yes, it wasn't your traditional ladder match with the selling and everything that you might see for an extended contest, but for a televised ladder match, it told the exact kind of story that you want to tell for these kind of matches. They're vicious, they're highly effective, and they're a very good way to settle things once and for all when Owens got the opportunity to go grab the briefcase to fire Shane and then told him to his face he was fired, like he promised to do with the very start of the storyline. Tony.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. That's what I was going to choose just at the last minute. I think it stood out amongst the rest. So it was fun. It was a fun match.
No shortage of options here, but pick the one that you feel best fits. Greg Watry.
Hey. Oh, let's see. See, this is a little harder because...
Again, I can go first.
Okay, go.
the opening for Raw, specifically the Bobby Lashley-Lana part of it. Rusev going ham and then destroying Orton and Corbin, I was cool with, because it actually showed an aggressive side to Rusev that they could maybe transition into something going forward. However, I could not give a fuck about Bobby Lashley as a microphone performer, and I don't care about Lana on the microphone either. Lana's hot to look at, sure. She can't cut a promo to save her life. Bobby Lashley's turning into a decent in-ring competitor, but he can't cut a promo to save his life. And you're putting the two of them together as a couple in order to waste television time. No fucking thank you. Tony?
I don't find Lana attractive at all. Let's see.
Outside of the Lana character, she's actually very pretty. Without all the
makeup. She's not ugly.
The Lana character.
She's not ugly at all, but not my type. Nonetheless, I'm going to go ahead and go with the full-part brawl. Wow. See, that is a very common misconception. I dated one Asian chick for 1.5 years, and now everyone thinks that's my type. It's not.
What about your favorite porn stars again, Tony?
Not all of them are Asian. I think only one of them is.
Continue.
All right. Oh, sorry. Thinking about porn. Yeah, the pull apart brawl for sure. I'm gonna have to go with that one. I'm not a fan of them, but this one
That's
in particular
cool.
made it a lot worse because it was somebody that doesn't exist in the WWE world until, you know, last week. And it's not someone that I think anybody would care about. I just hate pull-apart brawls. I hate them, I hate them, I hate them. But I like to think that I always have a reason to hate them, and this is no different.
So what you're asking is,
ladies and gentlemen, can I have some decorum, please?
That guy. The winds of change.
I miss Barrett. He's so relevant even today. Man, if they wouldn't have made him get rid of the...
Go ahead. I remember when he cut that promo, I remember I was like, who is this guy? What just happened? Because you have to keep in mind where this promo aired and my expectations for that show.
Was this promo on Main Event?
No, it was on NXT.
Really?
Yeah.
I could have sworn the decorum promo was part of the Bad News Barrett shtick, and he was the one that on the main roster.
No. I'm talking about the Winds of Change. I'm talking about the promo that he had.
Oh, okay.
That was just leaps and bounds above everybody, and it was just one of those moments where when you're watching a show like NXT at the time where I was watching it, it's a blowaway show. Personally, it was my only way to get in the wrestling section of 411mania.com. And when he spoke, I was like, what the – who is this motherfucker? And what are you doing here? It was great. It was a nice little moment that I'll never forget.
Really wish they would have done more with him. I always enjoyed him as a character. I always enjoyed him as an in-ring performer. Okay. This particular part of the Wade Barrett Memorial Show is... Never mind. Moving on. All right. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
Raw?
Both. SmackDown first, then Raw. Because we're kind of have to separate these two.
Yeah, I'm going to give SmackDown a 7. You know, when you only have a 2-hour show, it's not hard to put on a good show, and SmackDown is going to be rated higher than Raw almost always, not on principle though, just by my own personal enjoyment of each show and how I've seen them over the past several years. SmackDown almost always wins. As far as Raw, I'm going to go with a 5. Nothing happened tonight, nothing at all, and what did happen to advance storylines is the storylines I'm not interested in.
I'm a little bit more forgiving on the main event between Brock and Kofi than you are, so my rating for SmackDown is going to be a little bit higher. I'm actually at an 8 for SmackDown because I thought the show top to bottom delivered in my expectations of what I thought that the debut needed to be for Fox. Get some of your current big names out there while still having some of your nostalgia moments. put the focus on the talent that's going to be there on a week-to-week basis, and set yourself up some stories to go forward with as well. And I thought they did a fantastic job of that. I'm also a little bit more forgiving of tonight's episode of Raw than you are, but I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I'm not as offended by the pull apart as you are. It's just one of those wrestling cliches, those wrestling tropes that you just kind of accept as it's a thing. It happens every now and then, and you just get used to it. So I'm gonna give Raw a 6. But compared to where we've been for Raw recently, it's definitely been a step down in quality these last couple of weeks, as they had to build towards the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view on short notice and weren't really building towards Hell in a Cell. And now that they're going to start building towards Crown Jewel and eventually Survivor Series.
You know what bugs me is how often I watch Raw and I see people say, like, oh, it's a restart or it's a refresh, or even Corey Graves saying it's almost as if there is a refresh button or something to that effect. There's no TV show in the world, I think, that just says, you know what, let's kind of sleepwalk through these next two episodes and start fresh season 9, you know, except for maybe The Walking Dead. But, like, really, that mentality is just – it bugs me so much, because how often do we have a quote-unquote refresh with wrestling? How many drafts have we had? How many WrestleManias have we had? How many Hell in the Cell – where the match is supposed to be a be-all, end-all, a fucking, you know, storyline. And how many more restarts do we have to go to where we get a Raw like this? Or when they go to Europe and it's like a half-assed glorified house show. I don't know where this mentality comes from. I don't know why they wouldn't want to put on the best Raw every single week, but this was definitely nowhere near that.
That's fair enough. Who's your MVP for both shows, Tony?
Me, for fucking watching them. No, let's see. I'm going to give it to Kevin Owens.
Okay. And what about for Raw?
Tonight, I want to say... go ahead and give me yours. Let me look at my report.
My MVP for SmackDown was Becky Lynch. She got the marquee segment with The Rock at the start of the show and then delivered in the tag team match. I thought the Owens and McMahon match was the best match on the show, but Becky stood out as the biggest star of the current generation on SmackDown. Tonight on Monday Night Raw, my MVPs are the Viking Raiders for finally being able to take that next step up to potentially being the Raw Tag Team Champions going forward and assuring us that we have an actual tag team holding the Tag Team Championships on Monday Night Raw. What a novel fucking concept that is. Tony?
Yeah, I was actually considering Ibar of the Viking Raiders. I think they do it so naturally that
Eric,
we forget. Yeah. I think that we forget how amazing that site is. I mean, you know, I've not done a cartwheel in several years, and I'm pretty sure I could do one, but I can't see a man Ibar size do a cartwheel and do it so fluidly, along with every other thing that he does. It's very nice to see.
One of the few memorable lines that Renee Young had on commentary when it comes to Ibar is 305 live, and it is a 100% accurate assessment of the dude. He is a freak athlete for a guy his size. All right, so there's another show on the network that will be covering the Wednesday Night Wars. We won't be discussing them in full. We won't be breaking down both shows. That being said, Tony, did you get a chance to watch the shows on Wednesday night this week?
I did not watch NXT. I mean, without divulging too much information, I don't know if I told you or not. Yeah, I think I might have. I'm now officially the person who's running the entire restaurant that I work at. I'm not just the bar manager anymore. And with that comes a lot more hours and a lot more stuff to worry about. So I watched what I had to for the podcast specifically. I watched half of AEW. I plan on watching the other half in NXT probably tonight or tomorrow.
Well, now Tuesdays are kind of free from wrestling. What's that going to be like for you, not having wrestling on Tuesdays anymore? I mean, I know, obviously, until SmackDown moved to Tuesdays, Tuesday was kind of a free night for wrestling fans.
well. But is it going to be weird getting used to once again not having SmackDown on Tuesdays?
Tuesdays I actually get Tuesdays I only use to write. It's my creative outlet day.
So you'll be watching the end. No, you won't be watching Raw and NXT or NXT and AEW right now because you're going to go see Joker here soon.
Correct.
Speaking of which, we can have a discussion about that next Monday night when we do the show.
All right.
By the way, Tony, I'm Batman.
Yeah, I see. I don't think you are.
Well, let's be honest. If either of us is Batman, you're Batman. Oh, my God. Does that make me Robin? Because I really don't want to be Robin.
Maybe.
Can I be Alfred instead?
Sure. I like that.
Okay, that works. I'll be the butler. It works for me. For the absent co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi, who we hope to have back next week, assuming the Yankees get knocked out of the playoffs. And
man,
for the downtown state.
My city is stressing.
Go
over
ahead.
Here.
Dodgers taking over the bar again.
Oh, yeah. Not in a happy way. They lost today.
Fuck them. I hope the Nationals knock them out on Wednesday. I genuinely do. I'm a Braves fan, so I'm hoping, honestly, frankly, both teams could fuck off as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, for the absent Liz Puglisi and the Down Since Day One co-host Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst. This has been the debut edition, officially, of The Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 8:30 California, if you're out there with Tony. Send us home.
Deuces, bitches.
So the format's obviously going to be changing a little bit and evolving as we go forward. But one of the things that we want to do here now that we've changed the format a little bit is talk to you guys more about the shows as well. We want your feedback on the shows. We want to talk to you guys about what you think during the shows. If you want to talk to us, if myself or Tony on the Raw Report as well, by in the 411 chat over there, by all means, feel free to do so. If you want to talk to me through the Facebook chat, by all means, feel free to do so. If you want to call in and give your opinions, if we have a little bit of time at the end of the show, we'll be happy to take opinions about Raw or SmackDown here at the call-in number for the Reaction over here on the Chairshot Radio Network. And we hope to do that going forward once we get more of a footing as to how we're going to do the show's format going forward. I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope that you will join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, as we present The Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.